Thank you for joining us here. Today we're going to be examining a question which is very important. It's also brought up a lot by non-Muslims, and that is the problem of forced conversion. People are always saying Islam spread by the sword, Muslims were constantly conquering different civilizations, and when they conquered them, they forced the people to convert to Islam. And this is how Islam spread. There is no inherent truth in it. If people were not forced to convert to Islam, they might not have been. And we don't want to argue and say that this is not something that occurred here and there. But generally, historians are of the opinion, aside from, we don't want to discuss whether this is something that goes against Quranic principles or not. Right now we want to examine this question from a historical point of view. I mean, did this occur or not? Regardless of whether it is in line with Quranic principles and in line with the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet or not. Historians are generally of the opinion that forced conversion was very rare in Islamic history, and that most conversions to Islam were voluntary and people converted on their own. It's true that there were battles in which Muslim rulers sought to invade other countries and civilizations and conquer them. But Muslim rulers were more interested in conquering those civilizations than actually converting the people there to Islam. Because for them, it really didn't make much difference whether the peoples there converted to Islam or not. Most of these rulers were corrupt. They wanted to conquer these lands. And regardless of whether the people there were became Muslim or not, they had to pay their taxes to the Muslim rulers. And so for them, it really made no significance. In fact, if they remained in their faith and they remained a minority within the Islamic nation, it might have been more in the interest of these rulers. A historian, Ira Lapidus, says the following in this regard. The question of why people convert to Islam has always generated the intense feeling. Early generations of European scholars believed that conversions to Islam were made at the point of the sword, and that conquered peoples were given the choice of conversion or death. It is now apparent that conversion by force, while not unknown in Muslim countries, was in fact rare. Muslim conquerors ordinarily wished to dominate rather than convert, and most conversions to Islam were voluntary. In most cases, worldly and spiritual motives for conversions were blended together. If we want to look historically at this problem, we can also look at the lives of our Imams, alayhimus salam. Especially the life of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam lived in a time when slavery was very rampant. And because of these conquests of Muslim armies, a lot of people were taken as prisoners of war. These people did not belong to Muslim faith. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, one of the most beautiful things in his seerah was that he would go and he would buy these slaves. He would bring them to his home. He would teach them about Islam, and eventually these people would convert to Islam on their own after learning about about the Islamic faith from the Imam, and then the Imam would set them free or give them the choice of whether to go free or to remain with him. So this question, we would like to answer it in the negative. No, Islam did not, historically speaking, spread by the sword. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at forced conversions in Islamic history. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy on the program The Key on RIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shmanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of first to six. My dad, who is from India, just
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, October 17th, 2021. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English Radio programs. If you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, the Sunday program, your program, dear listeners. As usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. As you may know, these reception reports are very useful and important to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports, as you may know, enable us to provide a better service, a high-quality service, to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from us in the time of pandemic. Here, I do appreciate those of our dear listeners who have sent us reception reports, including N. Arun Kumar from India, who is one of our regular listeners, Sixten Niman from Finland, who is also one of our regular listeners, and Vlad Vinogradov from Russia, one of our old and regular listeners. And Arun Kumar, Sixten Niman, and Vlad Vinogradov, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Many thanks for sending us these reception reports. And here, I read the names of our dear listeners who have sent us emails from around the world, and later during the program I will read their emails. First of all, we have an email from N. Arun Kumar from India. Toshio Shibata, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email from New Zealand. We have an email from Nicholas Lynch and Jan Thornblom from Sweden. One of our regular listeners has sent us an email, and the last but not the least is an email from Pastorino Gianni from Italy, who is one of our regular listeners. Please stay with us until the end of the program. I will read these great emails from around the world. Welcome back. First of all, we have an email from N. Arun Kumar from India. N. Arun Kumar, one of our regular listeners, says, "Dear Sir or Madam at IRIB English Radio, I thought this reception report enclosed to this email might be helpful for you. Unfortunately, there was a lot of noise in the broadcast that I hope it will be fixed very soon. I will be happy if you can please verify the report and send the QSL card with the program guides, pens, stickers to my address. Salam and warm greetings to you and Arun Kumar from India, and many thanks for sending us this email, and of course thank you for sending us the reception report. Of course, the reception report you sent to IRB English Radio is very helpful and useful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. My colleagues will soon send you an eQSL card, because in the time of pandemic, sending QSL cards, paper QSL cards, and the items you requested, including program guides, patterns, stickers, is not possible at the time of pandemic. So you can find the program guide or program schedule in our website at www.parstoday.com/yen. Anyway, it was a pleasure to have you with us in this program. Write to us soon, and Arun Kumar from India, and tell us your views about IRB English radio programs. And from Japan, we have an email from one of our old and regular listeners, and that is an email from Toshio Shibata from Japan. Toshio Shibata says, "Hello, further to my report 2 weeks ago, I am re-reporting a reception of IRIB World Service. This time, I was able to listen to the broadcast much longer at a better condition. I attached an MP3 recording. I hope you will recognize the voice of a speaking colleague. Could you please send me an eQSL indicating my reception? Thank you in advance for your kind understanding. Best regards." Hello, warm greetings to you, Toshio Shibata from Japan. I do appreciate you for sending us this email. And of course, my colleagues will soon send you an eQSL for verify your reception. And we received your MP3 recording. Thank you for that, for the MP3 recording. So you listen to the broadcast much longer at a better condition, and it's great. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRB English radio programs. Toshio Shibata from Japan. And now, dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails, and this time from New Zealand. Welcome back from New Zealand, from the Southern Hemisphere. We have an email from Nicholas Lynch. Nicholas Lynch from New Zealand says, "Hello, my name is Nicholas Lynch from Christchurch, New Zealand. I would like to present you with a signal report for the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Please find attached a recording I made, broadcast received UTC, that is 419 to 450 here in New Zealand. Signal was strong and clear. Thank you for great programs. Kind regards." Salam and warm greetings to you, Nicholas Lynch from New Zealand, from Southern Hemisphere. So you are from Christchurch, New Zealand. Thank you for telling us. And I think it's spring in the Southern Hemisphere. Yes, we in Iran are located in Northern Hemisphere, and it's for the countries that are located in the Northern Hemisphere, it's autumn. But I think the countries in the Southern Hemisphere, they are experiencing a spring. So the weather is great as well. In Iran, it's autumn, and the weather is amazing. You can't believe it. We are very happy that our signals are received in Christchurch, New Zealand. That's great. So it seems that you enjoy the programs and the quality of the programs. As you said, the signal was strong and clear, and we had great programs, and that's great. Many thanks for sending us this email. Nicholas Lynch from New Zealand, write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs, wait for an EQSL from IRIB English Radio. And also from Sweden, we have an email from Jan Thornblom, who is one of our regular listeners. Jan says, "Dear staff of IRIB English Radio, as my hobby is listening to distant radio stations, I was very pleased to hear your station. The signal strength was quite okay, but a little unstable with some atmospheric noise and interference from a transmitter. Thank you very much for your nice program. I hope you can identify your program through this detail. If you found my report correct, I should be very glad to receive your QSL card, a letter, or an email as a verification that I really have been listening to your nice and interesting station. I am 83 years old. I am living in central part of Malmo, which is a city with about 345,000 inhabitants, located in the province Skåne, in southern part of Sweden, and only 30 kilometers east of the capital city of Denmark, Copenhagen. I hope to hear from you soon. Best greetings." Salam and warmest greetings to you, Jan Thornblom from Sweden. And we send you our warm gratitude for sending us this great email. Thank you for reflecting your views about IRIB English radio programs and its quality. And thank you for sharing your information, the place you live. You said you live in central part of Malmo, which is 30 kilometers east of the capital city of Denmark, Copenhagen. That's great. So you mentioned that your hobby is listening to distant radio stations. And that's good. Please tell us which program or programs in IRIB English Radio you like the best. Because you said you enjoy the programs and you found them interesting. So tell us your opinion about these programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. And you had some trouble with the atmospheric noise, as you said, with the interference from transmitter. We will inform our technicians and engineers about the problems you mentioned. So please tell us more about you know, these problems in the near future. If there was any problem, and then we can fix it. Write to us soon, Jan Thornblom from Sweden. And we're looking forward from hearing from you. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. Wait for one of them. And now, dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with an email from Italy. Welcome back. This email is from Italy, from Pastorino Gianni. Pastorino Gianni is one of our regular listeners, but we haven't heard from him for a long time. Pastorino says, "Greetings from Andorra, Italy. I am receiving with great pleasure your programs. I would be happy to receive your QSL card. Thank you in advance and best regards. Ciao, salam." Greetings to you, Pastorino Gianni from Italy. Thank you for writing to us. Yes, we haven't heard from you for a long time. Write to us soon. And wait for an EQSL card, because sending paper QSL cards in the time of pandemic is not possible. So you have received different programs from IRIB English Radio. Please let this relationship continue. Write to us soon and tell us your views about the programs you had from IRIB English Radio. ¶¶ wishing you all the best in life, of course, wishing you safety and health in the time of pandemic, we wrap up this week's edition of Listen to the Special. Please keep in touch with us and have a good time.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pastoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pastodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll be discussing the commentary of the 23rd chapter of the Holy Quran, Suratul Mu'minun, or the Believers. Now let's just listen to the related verses and then we'll be back. So stay with us.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وَقُلْ رَبِّ أَعُوذُ بِكَ مِنْ هَمْ
and say, My Lord, I seek refuge in you from the incitements of the devils. And I seek refuge in you, my Lord, lest they be present with me.
وَقُلْ رَبِّ أَعُوذُ بِكَ مِنْ هَمَزَاتِ الشَّيَاطِينَ
As you have been previously with us, we were talking about the 97th verse. And say, My Lord, I seek refuge in you from the suggestions of Satan.
وَأَعُوذُ بِكَ رَبِّ أَنْ يَحْضُرُونَ
And I seek refuge in you, my Lord, lest they attend me. The 98th verse. So, in these couple of verses, the Prophet of Allah has been taught and has been called upon to treat the enemies of Islam in the best manner. Because in the 96th one, the Almighty Allah told him to repel evil with that which is best. اِدْفَعْ بِالَّتِي هِيَ أَحْسَنَ السَّيِّئَةَ So, the verse says, قُلْ رَبِّ أَعُوذُ بِكَ مِنْ هَمَزَاتِ الشَّيَاطِينَ O my Lord, I seek refuge in you from the suggestions of Satan. And it means that not only should he, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, seek refuge in Allah from the suggestions of devils, but he should also take refuge in Allah in order to prevent them from coming to him and taking part in his assemblies, causing hurt and temptations by their presence. That is why the next verse says,
أعوذ بك رب أن يحضرون
I seek refuge in you, my Lord, lest they attend me. So, we understood that one of the best situations for the Satans to somehow mislead the believers is their actions, specifically their misbehaviors to the others, همزات الشياطين, the suggestions of Satans, And more important than that is their presence. رَبِّي أَن يَحْضُرُونَ Lest they attend me. Because they are always the preface and preamble to the wrongdoing. And I seek refuge in you, my Lord, lest they attend me.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
The Quranic word hamazat, dear listeners, is the plural form of the word humaza, meaning intense release or discharge. The Arabic letter hamza is called by the same name because it is articulated with force at the back of the throat. Some interpreters are of the opinion that the Arabic words hems, ghams, and rams have the same meaning, but ramaz is light, ghamaz is stronger than ramaz, and hamaz
is the strongest of all. Regarding the fact that the Arabic word shayateen is used plural in this verse, it refers to all Satans, whether manifest or concealed, man and jinn. So what the Prophet, and of course all of the human beings are facing, is hamazat, not just one hams, but hamazat, the different kinds of suggestions, strong suggestions, and not just from one Satan, all different kinds of Satans, manifest and concealed. Now, the point is that when the Prophet ﷺ, who is infallible, divinely protected from sin and error, asks for such a thing from Allah, asks for that kind of refuge, well, it becomes quite clear to others that this command is even more imperative for those who do not enjoy this infallibility. All believers must seek the protection of Allah, their owner and their Lord, from the evil temptations, from the suggestions of the devils, and that he should not leave them on their own. Not only must they not let themselves be tempted by evil suggestions, but also they must not take part in satanic gatherings and assemblies, because as I mentioned earlier, and as the verse suggests, they are the preamble, they are the start of the wrongdoing. Thus, all those who want to follow truth must constantly avoid the satanic suggestions and must constantly seek refuge in him from this aspect, because the present tense of the word a'udhu shows that kind of constancy. Having all these three verses we discussed in the latest programs, the 96th up to 98th verse, we're also able to draw other different conclusions as well, we will inshallah touch upon in the next program. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah, subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah.
invite you to listen to a short part of the book Sirr al-Salat, The Secret of Prayer, written by Imam Khomeini. Allah the Exalted will appear in the hearts of its possessors through his manifestations in act, name, and essence. The glorious Quran refers to these manifestations both overtly, as in his saying, and when his Lord manifested his light to the mountain, he made it crumple to dust, and Moses fell down senseless, and covertly, as in the scenes witnessed by Ibrahim, the prophet, and the messenger of Allah, Muhammad, peace be upon them, which are referred to in the Surah Al-An'am and An-Najm, as well as in the narratives and the invocations of the infallibles.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to Spring of Truth, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. I am your host, Abdullah Al-Musawi, an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qom. Imam Al-Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, was quoted saying, Imam Al-Hussein's motive from the first day of uprising was to establish justice. He remarked that the good is not carried, but evil is being done. The aim is to establish the good and eradicate evil. Imam Khomeini, in these two sentences, he summarized the whole mission of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, which is to create reform, to establish justice, and eradicate evil. And that's just an indication that the Imam salamullah alayhi lived at a time where evil was at its peak in terms of oppression, in terms of the people's right being taken from them. Ya Rabbana salli ala Tahan Nabi wa alihi sallallahu Imam alayhi salamullah, he had to make a stand against such evilness. Such evil that the majority of the people back then and even now don't see. As long as they are comfortable, as long as they are getting what they want, as long as their affairs are in order, they think everything is fine. But the ruling parties, the ruling powers, they are constantly working behind the scene, depriving people of their rights, creating forms of evil that sometimes we might see as innocent, especially when it comes to moral actions. You see that, for example, in our current times, there are those who push the agenda of moral vices to be something entertaining, to be something freeing, to be something good. But we don't see it. We see the fancy face of it and that the terms of freedom, for example, where a logical person, a smart person, would understand that's a form of oppression, that's a form of evil. And Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, he set to eradicate such evil. He set to clear and cleanse society from such evil.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Communicate.
For the second time this year, the United States Congress voted to send Israel billions of dollars in military funding. Of course, there's nothing unusual about that specifically, but what is interesting is how progressives in Congress chose to coordinate their votes. On both occasions, members of the so-called squad, such as Ilhan Omar, Ayanna Pressley, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, either voted in favor of funding Israel or refused to take a concrete stance against it. So do these self-styled progressives actually support the Palestinian cause, or are they just all talk and trying to protect their careers and political ambitions in Washington, D.C.? We also take a look at the African Union. What is Israel doing in the African Union? Why was it granted observer status? And what is it trying to achieve? I speak to one of the lawyers who says that Israel has not earned an African welcome. He's part of a team that's leading efforts to revoke Israel's observer status from the African organization. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. We begin on September 20th. New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or AOC, proposes an amendment seeking to limit arms sales to Saudi Arabia and Israel. This came on the cusp of the third anniversary of the murder of Saudi journalist and dissident Jamal Khashoggi. AOC's amendment to block a sale to Israel worth over $700 million in Joint Direct Attack Munitions, or JDAM bombs, comes 4 months after Israel used these very munitions manufactured by Boeing to kill Palestinians in Gaza, most of them civilians. The offices of Al Jazeera and the Associated Press were also bombed during the Israeli onslaught against the besieged Gaza Strip back in May 2021. In light of these events, AOC's proposed amendments not only seemed quite sensible, but drew support from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and applause from human rights and pro-Palestinian advocates. This didn't, however, stop the Israeli ambassador to the U.S. from calling the congresswoman anti-Semitic for trying to restrict the sale of one weapon. The next day, another good move from progressives came when they nixed the Iron Dome provision from a government spending bill. The proposal would see another additional $1 billion sent to the Israelis to replenish their rocket intercepting system. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi likely added the Iron Dome provision to the government spending bill in an attempt to win over support from Republicans. This didn't work. And without Republican support, the bill was destined to fail. It could only pass by a simple majority if a handful of progressives in Congress agreed to it. They didn't. They said that if it's included in the bill, they won't vote for it. By acting as one collective bloc, they successfully removed the Iron Dome provision from the spending bill. Naturally, it's assumed that Israel would end up getting the money anyway, but this was the right thing to do, and it was in line with their stated principles of supporting human rights and standing up for Palestinians. For once, it seemed that progressives had finally gotten their act together. But unfortunately, this was short-lived. Just a few days later, funding for the Israeli Iron Dome was brought up for a separate vote in a standalone bill by House Appropriations Committee Chair Rosa DeLauro. Naturally, funding Israel is a much higher priority than raising the debt ceiling or making sure that the government doesn't shut down, so that had to come first. And as expected, the bill passed in a landslide, 420 to 9 votes. One Republican and 8 Democrats voted against it, including members of the squad, such as Ilhan Omar, Ayanna Pressley, and Cori Bush. However, the most famous of the group, AOC, mysteriously switched her vote from no to present at the last minute. AOC and her progressive colleagues apparently want to play both sides. She wants to appear like she opposes the establishment, but without actually doing anything to stand in the way. She wears a tax the rich dress while attending a $30,000 ticket event. She wears a Medicare for All mask while helping elect a House Speaker and a President who refused to support Medicare for All. And so here is AOC pretending to support Palestinians while refusing to take a clear stance against funding Israel. Well, AOC is, after all, not just a U.S. politician, but also a congresswoman from New York. Asked about her present vote on Mehdi Hassan's show, this is what she had to say.
Was it worth doing present? Because it didn't really satisfy anyone. The supporters of Israel are mad at you for not voting for it. Critics of Israel are mad at you for not voting against it. Do you regret that?
You know, it is something that I weigh because there's always the macro and then there's the micro. And in the macro of narrative, of politics, of national impact, I probably should have just gone with my value. But in the macro, which would be to vote no. But in the micro, I do believe that this created a window in our community to be able to bring all folks to the table, because my great fear is that we are going to import the same sort of contention around this issue.
Well, I don't know about you, but that didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Macro, micro, what is she talking about? Are you against the violent, illegal occupation of Palestine or not? It's a very simple question. Jamal Bowman, also a New York congressman and a so-called progressive, was also asked why he voted to fund the Iron Dome.
Your squad colleagues, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, Ayanna Pressley, voted no. AOC controversially voted present. But you voted yes. How come?
It's important for me to make sure I represent everyone within my district, not just some people within my district. And this was an issue that was very important to many people in my district.
So when Jamal Bowman says that funding Israel's Iron Dome is representing his constituency, what does that mean exactly? Is he a congressman in Israel or in the United States? I think what AOC and Bowman are talking about are not their constituents. They're talking about their peers, their superiors, and special interests in D.C. You see, by not voting against Israel's Iron Dome specifically, they are showing, they are demonstrating that their criticism of Israel is all talk. It's just an act. They're telling the establishment and the Israelis, don't worry, because when it comes down to an actual vote, we're not going to stand in the way. And now pay attention, because this is the most important part. You need to understand what's going on here. When it came to funding the Iron Dome, you saw who voted no. Ilhan Omar, Ayanna Pressley, Cori Bush. But a few months prior, they did the exact opposite. In July, those same politicians voted yes to give Israel $3.8 billion in military funding. That bill in July barely passed. 217 in favor, 212 against. Neck and neck. And if they wanted to, they could have said, no, we're not voting for this. We are not giving Israel billions of dollars 8 weeks after they just butchered Palestinians in Gaza. But they did. They voted for it. And now when it comes to the Iron Dome, when they know that it's going to pass anyway, they vote no. And only then they vote no, because it's symbolic, so they can keep up the act. They can keep pretending that they are in support of Palestinians. This is all such an elaborate, deceitful act. And they don't just do this with funding Israel. They do this with the $15 minimum wage, with re-electing Nancy Pelosi. Every time there is a crucial vote, an ugly vote, some of the progressives will vote no, but just enough of them will vote yes to make sure that it passes. We already know that politics is theater. We already know that politics is a dirty game, but they are especially good at it. They're playing both sides, trying to keep their supporters, their constituents happy, and maintain their street credibility, while also making sure not to upset the establishment. That's the most important one. And what's interesting here is that there's an entire debate about the Iron Dome. You see, people on both sides of the aisle are saying, it's purely defensive. How can you vote no? Of course we should fund Israel's Iron Dome. It saves lives. Wow, that's great. If the Iron Dome is purely defensive, can the Palestinians have one too? Can Iran, Syria, or anyone else give the Palestinians billions of dollars to build anti-aircraft batteries? Do Palestinians also get to defend themselves from aerial attacks and rockets? Because if we look at the numbers, if we look at the facts, who is really in danger here? It's the Palestinians. The majority of casualties are always Palestinians and always Palestinian civilians. Just logically, it is the Palestinians who need protection the most. They need protection from Israeli jets who bomb them almost weekly. Who in the U.S. Congress is going to stand up and say that Palestinians also have a right to defend themselves? Are they not human beings? Are they not equals like you and I? Once again, you can clearly see this double standard, how they dehumanize Palestinians. They deprive them of a home, deprive them of a state, deprive them of dignity, and even of the basic right to self-defense. Every time an American European politician opens their mouth, all they talk about is Israel's right to defend itself. And they use this to justify mass murder of Palestinians, war crimes, bombing UN schools, bombing the press, bombing medics. So again, I ask you, what about Palestinians? Where is their right to self-defense? Some commentators and politicians even have the nerve to say that the Iron Dome saves Palestinian lives. Which Palestinians? The ones who are living under Israeli occupation? This is like saying that German bunkers and German anti-aircraft batteries in occupied France are saving the French from Allied bombs. This is how sick and twisted they sound. This is their logic. Israelis are the only ones who can defend themselves, and everyone else, they're not important. So in addition to scoring another $1 billion in funding from the U.S. Congress, on top of the $3.8 billion in July, Israel recently gained something else. Israel was granted observer status by the African Union back in July. Israel used to enjoy observer status at the Organization of African Unity, but this was replaced back in 2002 with the current African Union. And ever since, Israel has been desperately trying, for almost 20 years now, to get back in and regain its observer status. But what is Israel doing in the African Union? Why was it given observer status in the first place? And what are the objectives that it's trying to accomplish? Well, the team, comprised of international lawyers, have lodged a legal complaint in an attempt to get Israel's position at the African Union revoked. Stay tuned, we'll be right back after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
Joining me now is one of those lawyers leading the effort. His name is Stanley Cohen. He's an attorney and political activist and has represented many high-profile defendants such as Musa Abu Marzouk of Hamas. He's also been a consultant to numerous NGOs as well as to movements and governments throughout the Middle East, with Hamas and Hezbollah among them. Stanley Cohen, the one and only, thank you so much for joining me. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for inviting me.
Stanley, if we could just start with the African Union. Why is Israel in the African Union? How did it get there? And could you maybe walk us through how it benefits from having observer status?
It remains to be seen. I mean, look, it's obvious that Israel has had a very close connection to various despotic regimes in the African Union since literally day one. It's provided arms to the genocide in Rwanda. It supported South Africa to the very end. They had a relationship involving resources for Israel's nuclear program in exchange for Israel helping to develop South Africa. It's been involved in Kenya, it's been involved in Angola, it's been involved, you name it. Israel's footprint is heavy, is long, is deep in Africa, and as is typical for Israel, it's very ugly, it's very violent, it's very despotic, it's very corrupt. But it has tried for over 20 years to get the observer status, and it has failed on each occasion. And what it did this time, and it remains to be seen whether we will be able to flesh out in full how it accomplished it, it waited until the legislative body of the African Union was in suspension, was not meeting, was not sitting, and it brokered some sort of deal with the committee, the executive committee that deals with situations while they're not actively involved. Who knows? Bribery, weapons, resources, contracts, relationships, they reached out and they got it. Now, what does it get? It furthers the Israeli agenda of, like the Abraham Accords, of saying we're good people, we're liking to build, we want to build bridges and open doors, we're getting bad press, we're not the despotic, horrible, nightmare, genocidal maniacs the world correctly describes them as. It's got billions of dollars worth of weapons contracts in Africa. Its private, quote-unquote, industry has billions of dollars worth of contracts for natural resources. The connectivity between the northern part of Africa, which is part of the Middle East, and the west and the east and the southern tier. What's most perverse about this process is it's a reintroduction, it's a reaffirmation, it's a reinflammation of the very white European colonial project that subjugated the African continent for 150 years. This provides Israel with an opportunity to work on its agenda, to work on its position and presence, to get access to information, to participate in discussions, to be able to introduce into the body politic at the commission or at the union their view, their discussion, their approach towards world problems, world issues. It allows them to build in a stronger safety net in the United Nations, whether it's in the General Assembly, where there can easily now be a dozen, 15 states, some the African continent that can support it and be opposed to Africa, to General Assembly votes against it. It builds in further support in the Security Council where it really doesn't need it. So on so many levels, this is a big win for Israel and a terrible loss for 1.4 billion members of the African continent.
You just mentioned some of the things that you also wrote about in Counterpunch. For example, Israel being able to garner support from other nations at the UN the next time that it bombs Gaza. Or you mentioned the extraction industrial complex, arms sales. Could you maybe just elaborate a bit more on these things and how Israel would benefit from having stronger ties with African nations in this regard?
Sure. Israel is always looking to engender, to develop new support for cover. New states, especially states of color, especially states that traditionally one would think would be opposed because they have a history of genocide, of European colonial projects. So Israel is looking to develop this cheering section, this rubber stamp, this group, particularly in the African continent, the continent of people of color, black women and men largely, certainly all of color, who supports them. So that when the debate develops about Israeli racism, about its supremacist policies, about its hatred towards people of color, about its support for European colonial projects, about it being one, it gets to point to Africa. And it gets to say, what are you talking about? We've got the support of the African Union. When it comes down to key votes over whether a committee in the United Nations will go one way or another way in terms of the potential sanctions, in terms of suspending Israel's rights or ability to continue in a particular committee, they can look to Africa. This is all part of the grand Israeli propaganda scheme, but yet on the other hand, it also provides some cover for those African nations, individual African nations that have been getting political heat and flashback for the close economic relationship with Israel. So it furthers the ability of Israel to spend, to sell billions and more. We now know, recently it's been exposed that Israel has this enormous surveillance technology that it's been selling to African states, the despotic regimes. We know it provides a launch pad to push back against South Africa and other historically independent states that have fought against the kind of apartheid, the kind of racism, the kind of hate, the kind of European colonial project that is Israel. So from a standpoint of propaganda, it's a win. From a standpoint of building in support for its economic, its military, and its political agenda, it's a win. And from the standpoint of garnering support from people of color, from a continent of color, the next time it knocks over schools, it destroys residential towers, it attacks hospitals in Gaza, it can look and say, what are you talking about? It's an extension. It's everything the Abraham Accords introduced but really couldn't produce.
Stanley, you yourself and a team of international lawyers, you've gotten together to try and revoke Israel's observer status. Could you tell us a bit more about how you hope to achieve this and how you're working to combat this?
Sure. It's part of a broader strategy. You have the activity that's underway in the African Union itself, where there's some two dozen states are now demanding a full discussion, debate, exchange when the African Union comes together again in another week, in less than a week. It is also part of challenges to Israel in various states in Africa under universal jurisdiction.